and welcome to the Forum for World Peace with Marcia McMahon and with Princess Diana. We have very special and wonderful guest, Andrew Russell Davis, who channels Princess Diana full voice medium. And it's really going to be quite interesting because Diana herself is going to be in charge of whatever is channeled this evening. But before we get to Princess Diana and Andrew Russell Davis, we are going to cover a message, which I do each week. And this is, I'm still channeling Diana, and her messages of diplomacy for the Middle East are extremely relevant, and she has asked me to read one each time we feature this wonderful program, the Forum for World Peace. And by the way, I meant to mention, too, that you were just listening to Peaceful Planet, if I forgot to give you the title on the new Lenin piece, which is his contribution also to world peace. And both Lenin and Harrison are now working on the other side, trying to influence our planet to world peace. So I'm going to read you my most recent message from Diana concerning the course of events in Israel of recent, with concerning, of course, Prime Minister Ariel Sharon. And we put out all of our best wishes for his recovery or his healing, however the angels want to take care of this man of peace. We send him a note of commendation for the work that he has done for peace, and we hope that his successor will be equally good. So I'd like to proceed then, and this is Diana's message for January the 5th in 06 now, and I am M and she is D. And M, hello, Diana, ready at your service now. Diana, well then, great to have you in our listening audience, as it were. We are most pleased with your efforts in getting our message out to your fine radio show, and John and George are quite thrilled with the way the music will be received in time. Marcia, well, tell them I am totally thrilled that we can feature the two of the Fab Four on our show, and their music is superb. It will make the show, Forum for World Peace, a true hit with their immense talent. Diana, indeed, we are all rejoicing for your success here, Marcia dear, and we also want to stress that you do need to do some explaining after your reading of my message to be very clear on the air what it is I am asking of Americans in particular, since these messages are political in nature and by their very nature could be misunderstood. Marcia, of course, I have the same thought, Diana. Not all will immediately sense the urgency of your message or its total relevance. Nonetheless, I will do my best to further explain and not have pangs of guilt if I make my guests wait a bit for the interview. Diana, good then, because what you'll be doing is education of your people about the true causes of the horror of the 9/11 event and a total prevention application for a political solution for the troubled Middle East. Of course, brings me to comment on many of today's most troubling developments. Marcia, do go on then, Diana. Diana, thank you. The horrible suicide bomb, which took out so many fine Iraqi police trainees today, hit home very badly for the Iraqi people, who so desperately are seeking work and equally want stability in their country. This latest round of horrible vengeance put out by the terrorists is really sad, and let it be said here and now that these abominable crimes against humanity are accomplishing none of the goals of the Iraqi people. We in heaven see the distress and the horror of these souls as they arrive here after our solace and comfort to the bereaved, those who cross over. While we give comfort to souls, we want better solutions for Earth than what has been given. We are again suggesting that the United Nations or NATO send in peacekeepers to the Iraq area in time, so as to leave the U.S. troops a chance to return home and to clear the way for eventual withdrawal from Iraq. The insurgents feel these atrocities against their own people are driving out the so-called criminal U.S., and I am in no way saying that the U.S. is criminal, but this is the brainwashing of those insurgents. We support the troops who are the real victims, as well as the Iraqi people here. We want to see the U.S. withdraw as soon as things stabilize, and I am offering my insight here, not a final solution to this horrendous situation. Marcia, thank you for thinking this far in advance, Diana. And what about Ariel Sharon? I am deeply concerned for his health and the health of the roadmap to peace now. Diana, reading my mind again, Marcia, you do have a fine command of the issues here. We're all very concerned about the state of Israel and her position with regard to the continuance of the roadmap to peace. For surely Mr. Sharon was a man of peace, albeit he had not always been of that persuasion. We do not see that he will be able to remain in his post and that another will likely replace him. We all pray that this next leader will be able to lead in the same way, as Israel herself is quite fragmented, with segments of Zionists who want nothing to do with the Palestine. And the peace people who see the wisdom that Mr. Sharon had displayed these past years in yielding to the Palestinians their rights. If only the U.S. had listened to my plea for peace between these two nations some 4 years ago when my channel sent word of my work to the diplomat who was my friend. For that friend listened to my advice and considered it highly. We do not have an ear so close to my heart now. Notwithstanding, we are still doing this work very diligently, but reaching more through the radio show now. It seems the responsibility for governance now rests upon those reading these words and hearing them. In that we mean to ask for the state of Palestine as a means of restoring justice to the suffering people there and peace to Israel. We ask all Americans to support the cause for peace known as the Roadmap to Peace and to write elected officials and ask for a just solution to this one problem. For if you do this, and if the state of Palestine is created, all will be well with your part of the world, America, and no future terror will plague you there. It is my request that you hear my channel and look into her fine book of solutions that we have written together called With Love from Diana, Queen of Hearts, and that you do this today before it is too late for you and your children. My love in a troubled time, Diana, Princess of Peace. Okay, so I just want to briefly elaborate on this message, again, highlighting that she is asking that we as Americans please write to representatives and elected officials and ask that more be done for the roadmap for peace. For indeed, Diana channeled these words in to a top diplomat some 4 years ago, and they were heard and well regarded. And yet, the U.S. still needs to create a lasting and just peace for Israel and for the Palestinian state if there is to be any future at all for the people of the Middle East and any future for the United States. So it's an extremely grim scenario because the battle cry of the insurgents and of the other extremists in the Middle East has always been Palestine, if you listen carefully. And this is the core issue that only Diana has identified as that which will prevent a total annihilation, as it were, of America. Now, I'm not saying that America will be annihilated. I'm saying that they are planning different scenarios that are very devious and very horrible. And Diana has given me some indication in my book what these possible scenarios are. Obviously, she doesn't know exactly who, when, or exactly what may befall us if we don't work for peace. But it's very important that people begin to recognize the place that they have in the universe and that emails themselves can be very effective tools for peace. And of course, we're not asking anyone to go out and lay in front of a tank, spill their own blood, or do anything that would in effect endanger themselves. So Diana, of course, commends all peace workers. So I just wanted to give that clarity there, and we want to extend our best wishes to the State of Israel, Mr. Sharon, and the leadership. And it, of course, is my personal hope, as well as Diana's, that the leadership in Palestine be a leadership of peace that will continue the roadmap to peace, and that we would like to also ask the diplomats in the United States and the senators to please influence as much as possible the roadmap to peace and ask for it. And, of course, these messages have been forwarded on anonymously to former diplomats who were very receptive and initiated this entire process. For future reference, for those of you that are just checking in with the Forum for World Peace for the first time, my website is at www.angelfire.com/MV2, that's Marcia V2/Diana_speaks, And the title of the website is Diana Speaks to the World. And my latest book is With Love from Diana, Queen of Hearts. It is available through Baker and Taylor Distribution, through New Leaf Distribution, and also on the author website. And we encourage you to buy a copy of the book because the book is a tool for world peace. Now I wish to warmly welcome Andrew Russell Davis, who is a full voice medium for Princess Di, and he's going to be channeling in her wonderful vibration. And I hope you stay tuned because you can truly hear the princess in his channeling. Welcome, welcome, Andrew Russell Davis. How are you today, Andrew? Are you there with us?
Yep, I'm absolutely here. I'm very cool, thanks.
Oh, wonderful, wonderful. Well, is there a particular message that Diana would like to open with? Perhaps you could give us a little more insight into how you first connected with Diana, and I believe that you also have a message that highlights that first connection, which I guess was made just days after her tragic death in the accident. Is that correct?
Yep, Diana came through to me, as she will tell, on September the 7th, the day after her funeral. But she has actually spoken about this herself on her site, which on the web is www.dianaspeaks.com.
Wonderful, and it is a wonderful site, and we highly recommend that people visit that. I guess your whole book is published on that site.
The book's published there that she wrote that she does not want published to exploit her in bookshops. She saw that she didn't want me to be put into that category.
Oh, believe me.
That was her decision. She just said, no, put it on the net.
Yeah.
That way people can read it if they want to, not be like the media force-fed it.
Right. And so there really aren't that many people that actually know of your site, but this radio show is going to hopefully get people that are...
It would be brilliant, because I think that anybody looking in on the site will be quite amazed.
Oh, yeah, I'm amazed. Now, did you want to open then with that special message that she had when you first connected?
I'll get Diana now.
All right.
Well, the message was given, and it's on the site to be read, as I said, on the 14th of the 6th, 2005. For anyone who knows Andrew, the moderator of this site, what I'm about to say will be of no surprise. But for those who don't, I feel an explanation might be due. Andrew has been psychic for many years. He actually was born with the gift, and with his guide Cheng, has inspired and guided people for many years, and continues to do so for those open to listening to the wisdom offered. Anyone who's witnessed a Cheng reading will verify this. And then I came along. In life, Andrew and I never actually met to speak to, but we had a run-in outside KP in London, Kensington Palace. I nearly knocked him down in my car, of all things. Our connection instant. There was something neither of us had realized at the time. It was only after my death that our connection became all the more real. Andrew has not had media exposure about this, as the appropriate time for this has not come yet. But he has written and told my son William about it, which is necessary for the future, and he did many years ago, so will not be seen as jumping on the bandwagon, so to speak, which is important in the light of future events. When I died, Andrew was living in Gran Canaria, having left his native UK for a new life, and had not been following my story at all, so it was odd for him to find that on September the 7th, 1997, when endeavouring to channel Cheng through for a friend of his there, he got me instead. On my death, as everyone knows, the press had a field day when had I not sold well in life. Andrew had been aware of the press coverage, but living on the island, speaking Spanish, had not collected the papers for the week of the accident. In fact, on the night I died, he had been oblivious to it, on a conscious level anyway. Standing on the balcony of his apartment, staring at the moonlit tropical sky, thanking his lucky stars to not be freezing in the night air of London. The next day, it had been a friend who had made him aware of my death, and this is when things took a dramatic turn. He wore black until the day of the funeral, 6th of September, 1997, and found people consistently coming to him for comfort. As everyone knows, my death affected people strangely. One of these people, a German man, had collected all the Sun newspapers and lent them to Andrew to read, to be returned to him on September the 7th, 1997. Andrew went to the Safe Cafe as they'd met Dusso, and was told that since that day they'd met, the man had not been seen there again. So Andrew now has the full collection that he had not collected. On that same day, as I had said, I made my presence known to him. I have been channeling through him ever since for two main reasons. Andrew shows me something I personally valued in life greatly, looked for in people, and didn't often find, even in those I had extremely close ties to. Loyalty. And he has blind faith, which is the strongest of all, as there is no tangible evidence to support it, just a natural knowing and trust that I am with him. Our bond is a strong one, which is why he now is not daunted to expose it publicly, knowing full well, of course, there will be those who label him a nut or worse, which has actually, he found, has happened elsewhere on the net, and was a baptism of fire for us both, but served its purpose and led to this site being created. I always had a lot to say in life, which of course was part of the problem, but I have equally as much, if not more, to say in death, and which I intend on doing. And this site is the perfect platform for me to speak from.
And so that site again is www.diabetes.com, and you can read all the chapters of Drew's book, which has been, I guess, ongoing since this first time you connected with her. But she mentions an awful lot, and yes, she does have a lot to say, does she not? Now that, you know, she doesn't have to be restrained by royal protocol and that kind of thing. I wonder, I have seen on your site some other messages. Is there anything in particular that Diana would like to speak on today, Andrew?
Well, I think the best thing to do is just to go to the channeled messages and literally carte blanche, just run my mouth down them because it is on the web, and I'm just picking one now, and I'll just click it and just see what she says.
So we're letting spirit,
so
the beautiful spirit of Diana, decide what it is that she wishes to say.
Well, the first one she's chosen is one given on the 23rd of the 6th, 2005. The greatest performance of my life was also the most public, the wedding. I knew already that Charles's loyalties lay elsewhere, to the monarchy and to his duty as future king. He needed a wife, and I was the much sought after, perfect choice. Young enough and naive enough to be molded, free of a scandalous past, and with an impeccable background, given the family's historic connections, just perfect. I, of course, was enamored. And who wouldn't be, marrying the future king, with expectations of one day being queen? Something I always had a sense wouldn't happen. I'm now talking of the superficial element, the fairy tale synopsis, which suddenly was becoming all too real. But I knew, of course, there were tremendous limitations too, a taste of which I sampled almost immediately, with a media attention, which was instant and a trial. At the same time, initially exciting, it was a very confusing time. I really don't know how I felt a lot of the time, but was just blown by the wind, I suppose, in whatever direction circumstances dictated. I honestly had very little say in it all, and this lack of personal control increased as the time grew closer to the day of reckoning. I was cocooned with people I had very little in common with, and felt totally out of my depth, but helpless to do anything to stop the wheels already in motion. More and more, I felt like a lamb to the slaughter. It is true, I experienced personally serious reservations about everything. But just imagine the moment. Everyone, and I mean everyone, cheering you on, pushing you forward, so positively, including the media, who at that time had nothing but praise for me. I was literally swept away by everything going on, and laughed at by anyone whom I opened up to about my feelings of unease. Nobody conceived them being all too real, almost as if it was them headed for this regal destiny. I soon realized that my husband-to-be and I had very little in common, and tried my best,
even after our marriage, to accommodate this by mixing with his crowd to, as he put it, learn something. He, however, did nothing to appreciate my likes or needs. He had other matters on his agenda, much more important, doing what was expected to please his mother, Her Majesty. Personally, he was distant from me, which at the time I put down to his feeling pressured by everything going on. I had no idea at that point the truth. I was aware he and Camilla were friends and good friends, and that he listened a lot to what she had to say, and did not think it odd that she took more notice of me than he did. I had someone whom I felt I could trust and confide in, who would perhaps be on my side, and tell him how I felt about things. Evidently, I was not wrong. She certainly did that, and got to know me, so I could be manipulated much more easily. And I'm sure that he was aware of this. I don't know why, but I suddenly had the feeling not to trust her. It was odd, but it stopped me talking to her as quickly as I'd started. And it was then that I had a sense that she had a hidden agenda. And of course, I was right. Charles was marrying the wrong woman. I knew it, and that is why I had her banned from attending the breakfast supper after the wedding.
Well, there's the start. I mean, she's gone straight into it.
You know, I can really, this brings back so many fond memories, especially of her radiant beauty that she was on the day of her wedding, and so many of the, you know, the gilded carriage and the long train and
I know, and then you consider that all that time she actually knew that it wasn't real. It's quite incredible that she managed to, as she said, perform that day. I mean, it's quite...
Well, you know, in Rose's book, she gets into this a little bit more about Diana's feelings right before the wedding, and Diana confided a little bit more in Rose Campbell, who we're featuring next week, and I'm trying to unite all the voices of Diana from all over the world, and
sure.
Diana has asked that we unite in one united tapestry. Now, whether that would be a book or whether that would be TV appearances together or whatever, she would like us all to be pretty much one in the same fabric. So I like to point out, too, that Diana is addressing different audiences in all of these messages that she has, and a way of explaining the slight difference that you may hear in my channeling from, say, what you are definitely hearing in Andrew's channeling, with being a full-voice channel, which I am not. But the difference is that Diana's addressing a slightly different audience, and it's not that there's a different Diana speaking, which at times one might be tempted to think that, but rather that, in fact, when you would be speaking yourself, imagine yourself speaking to an audience of, say, elementary age children or an audience of younger teens, and then imagine an audience of say, world readers. So I'm not likening any of this to a lesser or greater extent to any audience, but I'm saying that when a person prepares their message, it's going to be different depending on the audience that she's wishing to reach. So that's why you're going to hear a slight difference. And then each channel is going to be different, too. And then Andrew has just a marvelous connection to Princess Diana. And it's almost really like having her here tonight in the studio, Andrew. It's just phenomenal. You're just great. Now, is there anything else that she wishes to speak on? I know she had a more recent message that was pretty interesting. Maybe you'd like to highlight that, or maybe you'd just like to surf a little bit and let the mouse land where it will.
Yeah, I think just she's just seeming to just take me to, and just basically saying, look, just make it real. Just go where I want you to go.
Okay. So all right, Diana, then we're going to turn this over to Diana and let Princess Diana have her say for this evening.
Oh, she's picked another one now, and it's the 12th of the 7th. And I must say this, that I really don't know what she's going to pick to say. I'm literally running the mouse down, and it's just like as new to me as it is to those hearing it, because I have no idea. So the next one she's chosen is, as I say, on the 12th of the 7th.
I had told friends that having got out of one marriage, I was not desperate to jump into another one, and wouldn't have done. I'd learnt, albeit painfully, to be cautious in this area. I also had to consider the implications this would bring, as well as an emotional consideration of the effect it might have upon the boys, they always being my first concern. This is not to say that it was out of the question. Why should it be? I was divorced after all, and would not have welcomed spending the rest of my days alone, or indeed entertaining, one affair after another. I'd been damaged by my marriage, and consequently needed the time and the space to heal. And initially, friendships, well, let's call it that, which had no serious commitment attached to them, married men proving to be very useful and safe. Contrary to popular belief, I did not sleep with every man I enjoyed a friendship with. I wouldn't have had the time or energy to do so, or, of course, the inclination. I was very much aware that anyone I was seen to be enjoying the company of would immediately find themselves coupled with me and facing the publicity this would bring to them, as well as being detrimental to my reputation, which was something I attached great importance to and had to work hard to uphold against the system that was intent on destroying me in any way it could. It would not have been in my interest to play into their hands in any way. A friendship with me called for discretion. I was not, however, someone who coped well alone. Insecure, I needed to know I was loved, albeit the case that if these married men suddenly became free agents, it had the effect of leaving me running scared, as at the time I was not emotionally equipped to deal with serious relationships, although in hindsight, I might have well kidded myself, I was. Much has been written about my friendship with Oliver Hoare, someone I was incredibly fond of, someone married, albeit unhappily so, and for a while, someone who replaced James Hewitt in my affections, a very attractive and intelligent man. We had a relationship together. Did I make all the phone calls? In truth, most of them. As being emotionally vulnerable, I needed a security from him that, as close as we were, I sensed would not be forthcoming from him. And ultimately, my intuition was right. It proved to having been the case that I jumped out of the frying pan into the fire and was about to do so again. I encouraged Will Carling's attentions upon me, feeling flattered by them. He so obviously besotted with me, and of course a great character for the boys, both sports mad, to be around, but we did not have a relationship. It was a close friendship, and nothing more than that, ever. I was wrongly accused of having been the reason for his marital breakdown by his wife. It had nothing to do with me. The cracks in it there before it became public knowledge that he and I were friends. He'd sought my advice about his marital problems on more than one occasion. Quite why he thought I would be of help to him in this area amazed me. Two men I had spoken of already, so will not go on about. Hasnat Khan, or as I called him, Mr. Wonderful, being so impressed by his devotional professionalism to his work, something patients of his will, I'm sure, verify, someone I had tremendous respect for and loved deeply. But we knew that he, being so immersed in his culture and tradition, together with my celebrity, made a future for us impossible. And, of course, Dodi. As I have said, I was in no great hurry for marriage to anyone, but certainly Dodi gave me all the right signals for me to consider the possibility of it. And our both being divorced and disappointed in our search for love, were cautious not to make a mistake we might regret, prepared to take our time in enjoying each other's company, getting to know each other, and engagement precedes marriage. So she's gone. She seems to be very intent on getting certain relationships in perspective.
Yes, indeed. And, of course, I have a lot of information concerning her intent to marry Dodi, and I believe that you had some messages on that account too, didn't you?
I did, but I thought that would be preempting. I mean, I clicked on this one, and now, if I can continue, she's done one on the 27th of the 9th, and it says, it is now being suggested that at the time I died, I was pregnant with Dodie's baby. Well, it sells newspapers and keeps me once again in the headlines. What a ridiculous thing to suggest, and for some people to believe. I may have been rebellious and radical in some of my ideas and behaviors, at least viewed as being so by others. But even I, contrary to what some people may choose to think, had some morals. Can you imagine me explaining this to William and Harry? Mummy is going to have a baby, a brother or sister for you, with Uncle Dodie, the man you just met and spent your holiday with in the south of France this year. And she now must arrange to marry him, for the sake of Grandpa and Grandma, as well as Papa, of course. Well, that's how ridiculous a situation the suggestion is. As I've already said on my site, read my book in the forum area. I was not pregnant with he or Hasnat's baby, as no doubt that will be the next suggestion, in keeping with, of course, the fact suggested that Harry is Hewitt's son, and my husband at the time just accepting that being the case with no questions asked. They have yet to discover he and Camilla's love child. It's also totally absurd. Dodie and I hardly knew each other, though there was a very real chemistry between us, and a strong relationship was in its primary stages of development, but needed time for both of us, but time that we were both prepared to give it. We'd both of us suffered in relationships, and also were divorced, and so naturally, emotionally cautious. I knew all about Dodie's reputation and history, and he also knew mine. We'd been honest with each other in this respect, and both read the papers. He's a charmer, and I was not naive and could tell. He charmed me. But sleeping with people and being emotionally involved with them are two very different things, and Dodie and I, aware of this fact, felt that difference with each other. This doesn't mean that I became pregnant by him. Not at all. There were the birth to consider, before even engagement, much less a marriage was organized, and I would not have a child out of wedlock, being an old-fashioned girl at heart, well, in this respect anyway. Besides which, I'd seen far too much of this kind of thing firsthand in my work, and the dreadful results of it emotionally on some people, to want to entertain it for myself. There will naturally be those who imagine in their perverse minds that I'd allow it to happen, despite the monarchy and the establishment. Well, I'd done that already, entertaining a relationship with a man, without my having to go to those extremes, which might as well have lost me the respect of my children. And for that reason alone, therefore something I wouldn't have taken the chance of doing. As I've said, though, Dodie and I were enjoying getting to know each other, and if we were going to have a family, that is to say, if our relationship had developed sufficiently for this to be considered, it would be then, and after first engagement and then marriage, that our child would have been conceived and born, and not before. People wonder what I said, what I meant, when I said that I had news that was going to shock people, and a lot has been imagined what I might have meant, and it was simply this. I had decided to leave the United Kingdom and to settle abroad, and at the time considering New York, as I was tired of the British media's constant intrusiveness, which had back in 1993 already led me to resign from public life, albeit a short period, but one in which I was able to sort myself out a bit without its intensity, before of course realizing that it wasn't something actually fair for me to do, knowing how valued I was by the people, and making, as I found, a much welcomed return. I wanted a new life, and divorced, I was free, and always made to feel so welcomed in the United States, and with an all-important, to me anyway, different kind of media attention, a far less hostile one. I naturally would have missed the boys, but I know they would have understood, and at school anyway, would have spent marvelous holidays with me, as we always did together wherever I might be. But it was also something wanted by me, to make a break with any close family connection, particularly in respect of my own mother and brother's opinions of me, which hurt. I wanted nothing to do with them,
and to be as far away as possible from them, to make this point abundantly clear to them. This and the fact I felt awkward, still being in the same country as the Prince of Wales and his now new wife, a relationship that obviously I knew was going to develop, though at the time, not to what extent, but it nevertheless finding myself, personally, in an uncomfortable position, and with a desire to extricate myself from it. In the United States, also, having a number of good friends, including, of course, Lucia, whose husband was latterly based in Washington, D.C., and someone whom I missed so badly. I knew whatever I did, within reason, I'd not lose the people's love and respect, and this was something very important to me. A very valid reason, indeed, against my becoming pregnant with Jody or anyone's baby outside of marriage. It might have lost me that admiration, love, and respect, something I was constantly reminded I had, and so naturally well aware of, and grateful for. I would hardly have put myself in a position to jeopardize it, losing it by any action I might take that could have been avoided by me. I would have wanted my child to benefit from loving and devoted parents who loved each other, and that's something that was denied to William and Harry, as well as, of course, myself, and I was determined that history would not repeat itself in the future, knowing the very real emotional damage this can do to a child, through both that of my own personal experience of it, as well as that of witnessing its effect upon my boys. The child will naturally have all the love, care, and attention a mother can give a child from me, equal to that which was given by me to my boys. Also, have only been born in an emotionally loving and stable environment, and that would have been something determined by time spent with the father-to-be of that child, so not something considered by me with someone up until that time anyway. I had enjoyed a summer cruise with, as well as cozy evenings together at his London apartment. Dodie and I, as I have said, were in the infancy of our relationship, but both of us could tell there was plenty of potential for it to grow, and we were willing to take our time in every stage of its development. Our child, at the time of our death, was our relationship, and that, at the time, needed our tender, loving care, which is what we gave it. So she's really, she seems to be in this interview making the point basically about all her relationships and settling scores.
Absolutely.
That seems to be her be-all and end-all at the moment.
Yeah, I had asked her, of course, you know, privately in some conversations when news items would hit the press, I did one time ask her, very politely, of course, if there was anything to this rumor about her being pregnant, because so many different sources had said that on the news. And I, of course, didn't believe it, but I didn't know. So
sure.
She said, oh, of course not. That's absolute rubbish, as she says in her brilliant, you know, English accent, Scottish rubbish. So I knew that, you know, this confirms what I have from her. And that being said, though, I do know that she was romantically inclined and anticipated marrying Dodie, and she has said that she and Dodie are together on the other side doing this peace work. And I really believe that it was more or less God's intention for her to be paired with Dodie, and she has mentioned this to me in my work anyway, because of the unity that could have happened between Dodie being a Muslim and she being English and a part of the royal family, though. But I know that was probably looked down upon by various members of the royal family and scorned and so on. But nonetheless, I think it may have been in God's mind to bring this unity together, because the message I have from her, of course, deals with the unity of all religions. And Diana herself in life was always very, very supportive of people of any faith, of any walk, and it was almost like she took the side of everyone.
Mm-hmm.
You know, especially in her great work with landmines and Bosnia and that whole, you know, her service work was just magnificent, you know. And this work, I think, really laid the groundwork for the work I'm doing now in terms of her vast understanding from spirit that she has concerning the Middle East. So I think that Diana I had a great deal of political insight into various heads of state while she was living, and she had a good influence on just everyone that she touched in one way or another. And it was herself a tolerant and loving person who reached out to the most underprivileged and the most damaged of people, of course, that being the children who were the victim of a landmine. So if you have anything that, you know, comments on her work or anything that she would like to say, we'd like to hear from Diana.
Okay, well, she's picked another one while you were talking. And this goes much more spiritual. This is about what you were talking about earlier, about the different ways of speaking. And she had a message about this on the 27th of the 9th, which shocked me because actually her site is much more personally based than this normally. But there was obviously a need for her to put a message like this out for those, I suppose, who were looking at the site and thinking who the heck is. So, but she says, we here in the spirit world communicate at different levels of understanding with different people, and depending which audience needs to be reached and in which way to promote the best results from that communication. Even those of you who are not conversant with the concept of spiritualism will, I'm sure, be aware of having heard the term the higher and lower self. You will be much relieved to know that I do not intend, on my site anyway, to draw you into a long seminar about the fundamentals of spiritualism. There's plenty of literature available on the subject if this is of interest to you. And those with the knowledge, even a basic understanding of it, do not therefore need any teachings I might offer. Also, of course, as I've indicated, I do communicate at other levels of understanding in different areas. You experience here one of my voices, which is something, again, I drew attention to recently, telling of one voice speaking in unison. And on my site, it is necessary for me to remain pretty grounded. That is to say, that Diana being instantly recognizable to both those who knew me as well as those who didn't. And that is something that I know is happening. And as these communications from me progress, will be something that becomes more and more apparent, until eventually the proverbial penny drops and there are no doubters at all. But this will naturally take time to happen, though I have to say, not as long as perhaps is being imagined at this time. I have yet to say things of tremendous import, which is something I will be doing at the appropriate time, though already things have been said here that are being noticed, which, of course, has been my intention since first inspiring the creation of my site. All of us have a higher and lower self, and in the spirit world, we resonate with a higher self more easily. Earthbound, we touch on our higher selves, albeit less frequently, naturally, but when, by example, we have premonitions or experience strong gut instincts about things that, strangely, to our earthly selves anyway, apparently come true. So therefore, mediums and people given to work in these spheres have been called, if you like, to evolve themselves this way, and usually is to give the benefit of their wisdom to other people and to help them. So, of course, everyone has this potential available to them, which is something to consider when someone calls you to advise them on something or other, and you are the one that has sought for that advice. So, naturally, I don't mean they're asking you what they should wear to impress the boyfriend. I mean speaking of matters usually of a personal nature in which your serious advice is wanted. This is just an example of what I'm talking about. Of course, there are many others. How many of you, through changing your mind, have averted yourself from involvement in a disaster, plane crash, with loss of life, by example? Why has this been so? Your higher self, communicating albeit silently through a thought pattern to your lower self, for you not to take that flight. So no less powerful a voice than the one that speaks. In fact, more powerful. And you obviously having need to still be earthbound, whilst in the eyes of others, those still earthbound anyway. The victims of that plane crash, not so fortunate. It is not the place for me to explain further things of this nature, but it was necessary for me to illustrate by this example the point I'm trying to make about everyone having, and indeed albeit subconsciously, using the ability given them to connect with their higher and lower self.
The people who work in their daily lives to help others, doctors, nurses, as an example, are perfect disciples of the higher self working through the lower self, the spiritual side of them, their naturally caring and compassionate nature, being clearly illustrated in their choice of vocation and expressed through the lower self, their earthly being. And particularly as I found, those working in hospices where patients often need a great deal of attention and focus on the emotional side as well as the physical one. As with everything, there are exceptions to the rule, but by and large, this being the case, not all of us being drawn to these occupations, which demand dedication and albeit devotion to duty, and one of ultimate benefit to others. I found myself drawn to caring for others, even as a little girl, and this is something that developed with me, and everyone knows my involvements in these areas before I died, so there's no need for me to talk about them. But it was important work I was doing, and work for humanity, which gave me, earthbound Diana, a sense of tremendous personal satisfaction, the knowledge I was helping. During the course of my lifetime, albeit greatly assisted initially anyway, by my royal connection and title, I met some fascinating people, equally drawn to do valuable work, as I called it. Coming to mind immediately, of course, being Mother Teresa, Nelson Mandela, and the Pope, and latterly being fascinated by and explored the concepts of various religious beliefs, and most particularly Islam, illustrated by the fact I became emotionally involved with two Muslim men, both of whom I loved. There were many, many other people of great influence to me, Hillary Clinton, Henry Kissinger, as well as dear friends like Elsa and, of course, Lucia, and some good people I met through the work itself, and so are not household names, but they know who they are and the good they do, and that being enough reward for them, which says so much about them as people, knowing how greedy and corrupt the world is. I do not want to labor the points of the differences between my world now and yours, as at the appropriate moment, is something you'll be given to experience for yourself anyway. And also, as I've said on my site, I must be seen to emulate earthbound Diana in order that my essence within my site is one universally believed in, as that is the ultimate intention for its creation. And as I've said, will be something that takes time, but I have the confidence and the belief in its eventual reality, there being sufficient evidence of everything that remains at this testifying for it to be something unquestionable, even by the most cynical of critics, their criticisms, if voiced, falling on deaf ears. On my site, it is not relevant what matter or form my higher self takes. That, as I say, is something others enlightened are equally aware of, and were I to illustrate it here, it would most certainly be out of context and naturally misunderstood, and is therefore unacceptable. But I will say this. My life gave me a purpose, and in the short time I was given to live it, much of that purpose was achieved, so it was not time wasted. My quest was, by example, to promote and evoke humanitarian instincts in people, and to do so in action, and not just by word, which is why I did get directly involved with matters that concerned me, and which is why I had the hands-on approach I am remembered for, and why I was not daunted to expose and bring the focus of attention upon things that largely remained hidden, certainly from the public eye, physically touching AIDS sufferers, being just one example of this. My untimely death also serving a profound purpose, and particularly in the circumstances in which it happened, culminating in the feeling, anyway, of a certain martyrdom, a funeral unlikely to be forgotten, certainly by those who bore witness to it, and grief that is still felt today for my loss by people who didn't know me personally, who never met me, as well as those who did, something made evident by the amount of Diana memorial sites on the net alone, as well as a place in the world's history books, albeit as a fairy tale princess who didn't end her once upon a time story, living happily ever after with her prince. I hope this has served, albeit in some small way, to explain to you perhaps why you have been and are so touched by me, even now, which I have no doubt at all is something you will at times have questioned, and to say to you all, as Andrews and others like him are only too aware, the earthbound Diana, the lower self that appeared as Diana, Princess of Wales, died in Paris. But the spiritual Diana, that of the higher self, remains very much alive, and the essence of her spirit speaks to those who hear her, speaking in the voice of her lower self, that she prove herself being acceptable, recognized, and understood by the audience she is endeavoring to reach on this, her personal site, Diana Speaks.
So as I hear her, I get images in my mind of the former Panorama interview and the way that she spoke, and it's just like I can hear physically in my mind's eye as you're speaking. It's so phenomenal, Andrew.
I know. I can't explain it. I have no idea.
Now, were you always a voice medium, or did this come upon you when you began channeling Diana?
Well, when I channeled Chang, no, there was a voice, but it was more me. But people, as I say, who hear me and then hear when I channel Diana, they're like,
oh, yeah.
There's just no comparison.
It's like she's physically among us again. It's exactly her, the way she spoke, the way she moved. And I'm seeing all the movie clips in my eyes. And, of course, I paint her, and I have a lot of photographs and books of her. And I'm seeing her in her various gowns and everything. I'm getting the elegant Princess of Wales here. And it is a slightly different Diana than the one that I speak to, in that the one that I am working with, it is the same Diana, let me say that, but I am working, of course, from her higher self. And in your work, she is deliberately embodying her earthbound Diana for the sake of clarity to those people who still need clarity on all the issues of her life. So your work very much addresses more of the questions that the tabloids and the other books have put out there, and she's basically, I think, writing through you in order to correct a lot of the misperceptions, if I'm not mistaken. Am I right about that?
I think she's done that, yes. I think that's the main purpose. And it's not to paint herself as a goody-goody-two-shoes, because she says consistently on this side, please, I'm not an icon, I'm not an angel, I was Diana, I made mistakes, I slept around, I came from a broken home, I mixed with drug addicts, she went to the homeless, and she didn't just go with goody-goody-two-shoes image, it was like, hell, you know, I came from a horrible background, my mother was, more or less rejected me, they wanted me to be a boy, not a girl. She went through hell, and she put all that personal experience out, and I think that the reason that, like, people warmed to her, and touched her, and wanted to be with her, was because she didn't have this hands-off approach, it was this hands-on approach. Hey guys, I'm one of you, like, you know, I'm married to the royals, but actually I've been on the other side of the fence, and I haven't forgotten it.
Well,
and I think that was the magic of her. It was the magic,
and definitely her heart of love. But then I would say that I have these magnificent messages from her that are so full of light and love, that she is, you know, very much among the angels and the ascended masters. And she has told me in my book that she is an ascended master. But she doesn't get too far into that with your work, because I think it would, again, it's a different audience. And
exactly.
The audiences that we're writing to are different, and this message of world peace that I have from her gives me every indication that she knows every single thing that's going on in the Middle East and elsewhere, and that she is, in fact, looking after the United States and England and the Middle East to prevent a future Holocaust, a future possible nuclear annihilation of the Middle East. It's very serious, the work that she's been charged to do, but it's my understanding, too, that when she first crossed over, she was much more in the personality of evaluating her lifetime, and then she didn't really come to me until 2001, shortly before the September 11th attack. So I think that by that time, and again, time has no meaning on that other side, but still, by that time, she had, I think, some premonition that something terrible was about to happen to the U.S., and and she wanted to either prevent it or she wanted to do something for world peace, which I think was a personal goal of hers when she was incarnate on the planet. So it's not like it's such a different Diana. It's more of an ascended version of Diana, is how I think of it. And, you know, our books do have different tones totally. So I think we want to clarify that for those out there that are just now tuning in. But you know, her voice through you is just magnificent. Is there one message that we might have time for that would be sort of quick? I think.
Well, she's just come for this one, and it goes back to more on the spiritual thing. And she gave this on the 21st, the 7th. She said, "For all his intelligence, man remains so ignorant and to his own detriment. It's so easy to be skeptical, far harder to be a believer, and particularly in matters that have no concrete evidence to support their existence. But if there was a more open-minded attitude generally, then perhaps some, if not all, of the problems facing him would lessen. What do I mean? Sadly, people in positions of power, and I do not mean necessarily politically, but people who could make a difference are in the dark about certain issues, which prevent them from being as constructively helpful as if they might be, where they'd be more enlightened to the fact that there is life after death. And I use this example as I'm speaking now, and desperately trying to warn people of serious repercussions to events still as not yet having happened, but which will provoke serious and life-threatening problems to people, certainly in the United Kingdom, but in other parts of the world too. Problems that can even now be averted by an acknowledgement, or at the very least, a willingness to accept, rather than just question, that what I'm saying on this site is true. Acceptance will lead to a different kind of reaction being taken to the messages relayed now, and particularly those which are dealing what is going to become a very serious problem. People in the UK have already died, and as always, innocent people, because I'm not being listened to seriously. I was intuitive in life, and I used my intuition wisely, as people who knew me will verify. I now have gained a far greater intuition about many things. And through Andrew, I'm trying to make people aware of this. He has contacted journalists in the UK, not to sell his story of channeling me, but to speak to someone seriously about what I'm telling him. And the reaction? Talk to a psychiatrist. With attitudes like this from people in the media, is it any wonder that the world is in such dire straits? Now imagine if someone had listened and then written an article about the warning. Two possible outcomes. The first being the public would be more alert to problems, which hopefully is now the case. And secondly, those who planned such atrocities as the London bombings, so shocked by the revelations of something they were about to do, becoming public knowledge before doing so, put off carrying out their destructive actions by the fact they've been written about, which would have, of course, invited a greater security anyway, immediately making things much harder for them, were they still inclined to pursue them. Innocent lives saved, so reason enough, I would think, for man to behave more intelligently. The media is an extremely powerful tool, but all too often is concerned with the superfluous and scandalous, rather than issues that best merit its full focus of attention. There will be further problems in the UK. In fact, as I have to say, they're just starting. As I've said previously on this site, before they began, and as I have also said, for all his wisdom, man remains so ignorant and pays the price for this, which is more often than not, and particularly now, with his life. I ask you, how wise is that?
See, this is the same cause to which she's speaking in my work, and her warnings about terrorism should have been heeded in England there with you, and they have been heeded, I believe, here in my work personally with one of the diplomats that she knew in life. So on that account, I hope, Andrew, that we've gotten Diana's great work out there a little bit more, and I want to mention both of our websites again, and unfortunately, we have to close because we're a little bit over time right now.
Okay.
But, your website is www.dianaspeaks.com, where you can read her actual words, and my site is www.angelfire.com/mb2/small_Diana_speaks at Diana Speaks to the World. And we're going to listen now to the great tunes of George Harrison. And the song is called Traveling Through Botswana, and it should be coming on momentarily. We thank all of you for tuning in this evening to Forum for World Peace with Princess Diana. And we thank Diana, and we thank Andrew. Thank you so much for coming, Andrew. It was a pleasure to have had you, and we hope to have you again.
Thanks very much. I really enjoyed it, and I just hope people enjoy our site.
Oh, yes, thank you. We'll be on it. I bet everybody in the world will be all over it. Thank you again, Andrew. It was a real pleasure. God bless now.
God bless now. Take care.
Uh-huh.
Bye-bye.
You have been listening to BBS Radio, a blogandservice.com production and a Service to Others endeavor. Thank you very much for tuning into our radio program, and we wish you much peace and joy on your journey.